Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this 21st of December. A delight to have you with us on this Thursday morning. As Ray just indicated in his newscast, a little weather on the way, but we have a beautiful day today, so we'll go out and celebrate it and enjoy it while we can. We have a wonderful group of people assembled here this morning, so we will celebrate them as well and talk to you about all kinds of things that are going on in the news. And of course, we welcome you to have your thoughts and share your thoughts by going to panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. All right, let me introduce the group to you. I'll go this way. Well, Stu Shinsky is here. Good morning, Stu. How are you?
A pleasure, folks. Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Editor, marketer, just a dear friend of this program is with us when he comes in for the media project, and we're thrilled that it was one of those weeks, and he is here, made his way up the thruway, and we couldn't be more delighted. Good morning.
Thank you, sir. Pleasure to see you.
Very nice to have you with us. Teresa, you ready for me to introduce you?
Absolutely.
Okay, excellent. Teresa Bourgeois is a communications consultant. She is with us this morning, as she is each and every Thursday, and we're delighted to have her here. Thank you very much.
On the solstice day.
That's right. Happy solstice.
So the light, we're moving into the light now.
Oh, are we?
Yes.
Politically?
Okay.
That's my hope. Yesterday was the darkest day.
Okay, Teresa. And Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld is with us. Good morning, Ira. How are you?
Joe, how are you? Nice to see you.
I'm fine. Very good to see you, sir. Always a pleasure. And Santa's favorite elf is here, Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I got my hat on. I put it in the right-hand lower drawer every year, year after year, and I take it out and put it on this day. And there it is, my ho-ho-ho hat. And I say that in all deference to everybody I know understands how important this radio station is to them, and that they will get on the horn and do anything they can to save it and to keep it going. And I mean that. It is never going to be easy, but with your help, we can continue to make it. It's always been you. It's up to you. Go to WAMC.org and say, okay, I really want to keep this thing going. I know it's not the tax deduction that will make you go, but if it's helpful to do it that way, do it now. WAMC.org or 1-800-323-9262. And I got to tell you, I thank you.
WAMC.org or 1-800-323-9262. Year-end giving, and we are in the giving season. So we thank you for all that you have done and all that you continue to do and will do.
It's true.
We appreciate it. WAMC.org. All right. The introductions are out of the way. Let us get to the topic at hand. We've been talking about this for weeks. It's finally passed. It's done. We're ready. The tax bill has passed. A couple hiccups along the way, but there you go. Looking at the New York Times article, when President Trump adds his distinctive signature to the tax bill, he will also be making a huge bet that the Republican strategy of deep cuts for our businesses and wealthy individuals will fuel extraordinary growth across the board. Perhaps more than any other American political leader, Mr. Trump knows that long shots like his own presidential bid sometimes pay off. In that vein, he and congressional Republicans are arguing that their bitterly contested and expensive rewrite of the tax code will ultimately create more jobs and raise wages. If they are proved correct, they will be repudiating not only historical experience, but most experts. From Congress's own projections and prognosticators to Wall Street's virtuosos, scarcely any independent analysis project anything like the rosy forecasts offered by the president's top economic advisors.
Look, Joe, this bill is a stinker. We know it's a stinker, and not only the people in this room know it's a stinker, but the people across the country know it's a stinker. Just take a look at how unpopular this bill is. So now we're in propaganda 101. The president brings a whole bunch of, should I say this, overstuffed folks to the White House lawn, and they clap each other on the back, and they say, aren't we wonderful? We've done this successful thing. Isn't this great? And yet, most of the people, by far, in this country who are looking at it are turned off by that sort of self-promotion. Now, you think these guys are sitting still. They're not. They've gone to people who want things from the government, For example, they go to ATT, who wants to buy what?
They're giving out bonuses.
Yeah, and they're giving out bonuses.
Giving out $1,000
this was
to
all
employee.
Set to go. This is all set to go, you know, to say, okay, you see, you're all a bunch of liberal liars, and we're making this happen. And not only that, a couple of other corporations have said, we're going to a whole 15%,
minimum wage.
Minimum wage. Yeah. Right. Thanks, Stu. You can always outthink my slow process.
You have a better hat, though. Nice pom-pom.
Well, I do, and I have a little bit more under the hat.
I was thinking the same
thing. It's hard to say that correctly in this climate, isn't it?
But, you know, building something else in that Time story that I found interesting. Something in that Time story. The Time story said that most households under $100,000 in income are going to get hit hard by this. The taxes are going to go up. And most houses under $100,000 household income, that's a lot of houses. I would dare say that's the majority of houses. They're going to get hit by this and hit hard.
But the problem is, of course, that we're sitting here at WAMC, a wonderful station. I think it's fair to say, as we saw yesterday, Chris Churchill here, that we cover both sides of these arguments.
To the best of his ability, he had a little difficulty getting his side in. But go ahead.
Well, he did because Teresa's always on the
well,
job.
You were a good second chair, but Teresa was a prosecutor.
Was the prosecutor?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Well, and Chris is a wonderful man, and really does believe.
Well,
what
I didn't agree with most of what he said. I just wished I could have heard more of what he had to say.
Well,
but that
he only
said,
had one thing to say, and he was wrong.
Right. Well, okay.
Well, come on. It's not fair to hit a guy
kidding.
When he's not fair to hit a guy when he's not here. We always try to keep it balanced, and we always try to do that. Nevertheless, we're not Fox News. We're not Fox News, and we're not Breitbart, and we are not, these right-wing crazies that put all of this stuff out there, which so many Americans believe. Now, it's nowhere near a majority of the Americans, but they believe it as if it's gospel.
Believe what?
Believe that Trump is a good man. He's lowering taxes. That it's that they're going to get something back for it, and that they've done the right thing here.
Well, I have a prediction.
All right,
and it is a prediction not based on my agreement with the bill. I don't agree with the bill. I think it's got very damaging long-term impacts. Emphasis long-term. I do believe that when people start seeing more money in their paychecks after the first of the year, short-term, it is going to be a more popular bill than it is now, and that Trump's ratings will go up. Again, I don't know that will hold up. The midterms are coming, so the timing it will probably be good for them if what I'm predicting comes through. But I think most Americans are going to look at this thing short term because they're going to see the short term benefits. And there are generally, with some exceptions, a lot of short term benefits. In my view, the long term on this bill is where it loses me.
Okay, see, I don't agree with you. I think, not surprisingly, I think that this is a stinker bill. And I think that the American people know it's a stinker bill and know that the richest in this country are making out like bandits, that the corporations are making out like bandits. They get that. They understand that. And that if somebody throws them a little bit of a bone, it doesn't begin to make up for the inequality and inequity of the bill, Ira. But we'll see whether you're right or not.
No, I was just thinking, are you two really disagreeing, though?
No, I don't think so. I think long...
It sounds like you're basically saying the same thing.
Let's stipulate a couple of things. One of us, none of us in this studio, I believe, have read the full bill. And so what we know about this bill is what we have read or heard on the broadcast networks or on cable. And I'm also going to stipulate
Hold on. Have you read the bill?
I have not read the bill.
No. Okay. And if Teresa hasn't read it,
nobody has read it.
I didn't read the bill. I've read a bunch of analysis.
Right,
about
as we all have. And I think
I think we'll learn more and more about it going forward.
Sure. Much like with Obamacare, which was widely unpopular when it passed, and it slowly came into favor despite Trump's glee yesterday.
You think that's going to happen here, Ira?
That it's going to become more popular.
Yes.
Again, I think it's going to be more popular short term if people see a couple of thousand more in their take home every year. I don't think that's sustainable. But, you know, the tax cuts, I believe it's 2025 for individuals. That's a long time away when that will no longer be the case. I don't think people mind if corporations get a benefit from the tax cut, if they're also getting a benefit. We can argue, and I think rightly so, that it's a disproportionate benefit. But nevertheless, I don't agree with the bill long term, and I don't think we have a huge disagreement in it. But what I was going to say is that since none of us have read it, and most people in this country have not read it, that our
including our, those who voted on
including them. Those who our view of the bill is based on A, the people who we read and listen to, who we tend to agree with and or respect, and B, importantly, those of us who do not like Trump watch the spectacle that he had after the vote was passed yesterday, and our just find ourselves so aggravated watching this man try and his colleagues revel in this bill. I think that in fact colors our opinion of the bill if we do not know exactly what's in the bill.
Teresa.
Yeah, I
and I thank Teresa for letting me get that entire thought out.
Well, one of the things that I read we got a lot of letters yesterday, and one of the things that people wrote about over and over again that we didn't talk about, I agree with you that people might see money short term and think it's a good thing, but as people noted that there's the doubling of the standard deduction, that's what people are going to see right away, but the personal exemptions go away. And even though the tax benefits go away in 8 years, the personal exemptions go away right away. Mm-hmm. The premiums will go up right away. And so I think the health care premiums will go up within a year. So I think that there, in theory, in the first month, by February, people will see a change in their paycheck. But the other thing that's going to happen is that there are intended consequences, and there's going to be a lot of unintended consequences to this bill. And they're going to find a lot of stuff hidden in this bill over the next couple of weeks. And so I think the more that comes out, there's probably going to be a lot of special deals tucked in here. They're going to have to do a quote-unquote manager's amendment. That means that always when you pass a bill, more so this one, when it goes fast, you have to do clean up things.
So you don't agree with Ira, in other words.
I disagree with Ira.
I don't disagree with what she's saying.
Well, let her just tell us all why she disagrees with you, Ira.
I disagree. I agree that they have put in that short term, you know, you're going to see it in your February paycheck, your check will be less provision. And that those changes go away, but they don't go away for a year. So people say, well, they won't notice it right away. But there are other things that they are going to notice right away. They're going to notice right away that they don't have the personal exemption anymore. We're going to know either by the end of this week or by the middle of January about what the deep budget cuts are. They're going to either do a continuing resolution or they're going to pass a budget with deep, deep cuts.
Like Medicare.
In programs. You're going to know that right away. You're going to know if interest rates start climbing because of changes that they've made in this bill. And people are going to feel the cost of interest rates going up.
And you know, Teresa, one other interesting thing that I saw here, and that is that the market has been going up and up and up and up. Let me just finish that one thought.
You're right.
You know, and the last couple of days has been really down. Not down terribly, but down. Not the same enthusiasm. Could that be that the mavens on Wall Street have some real reservations about where this is going?
About the deficits.
Well, but the stock market went up dramatically in the run-up to the bill.
That's right.
It may have encompassed the favorable impact may have already been.
Yeah, but Ira, why yesterday and why the day before when it looked like this thing was a sure thing? That's what I'm interested in. You know, when they went around and talked to all the economists as to whether this is a good thing or not, and got a lot of no's from people. They also went to Wall Street, and there were a lot of people on Wall Street of the people who know about this stuff who said this is not a good thing.
You talk about we all listen to the people we agree with. But I listen to Fox News. I've read a wide range of folks. I've read some of the conservative folks on this. And even on Fox News, there are people who are saying that this is not a good thing. And certainly a broad cross-section of economists are really worried about both the short and particularly the long-term impact of this.
And I think there's a group here that's not going to see anything in February.
And that is people who are not on payrolls. Because there's a lot of people out here in this new, quote, gig economy where they do a lot of freelancing and part-time jobs, and they sort of cultivate this career through many different financial revenue streams. They don't draw a paycheck. They're going to see it when they do their taxes in 2019, if they see it at all. And I think what was mentioned earlier about something tucked into the bill, there's a story in the Boston Globe today about a benefit to Trump that was put in this bill at the last minute.
It's the famous real estate benefit.
It's the real estate benefit. It's a 20% tax break on businesses for people who own buildings and capital assets. Gee, what current White House resident would benefit from that?
Not only that, but Corker is denying that he ever saw it or ever knew it. Let's assume for a second that he's telling the truth. That only leaves one major suspect.
Oh, yeah.
Trump.
Well, his chief economic assistant is not denying he ever saw it.
Interesting.
All right, so let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll continue on this and move on to other topics as well, but we do want to get your letters in. They are always an interesting part of our program, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Stu Shinsky, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan has a few of those pieces of paper in front of him, and he'll read them to us right now.
Why do you, or why does Alan, think that the American people, in quotes, oppose a tax bill on the grounds that it makes the rich richer? The admittedly few Republicans I talk of have absolutely no problem with the rich doing as well as possible, or corporations either. The subtleties of the bill with respect to its effect on the majority of Americans are another issue altogether. Let's try not to confuse the two. And that's Janet from Saugerties.
Well,
I think I know what I'm talking about here. I mean, after all, I am a trained economist, a political scientist. I'm so sorry about
it. It's okay if the rich get richer, but if the bill gets...
I was going to ask if you've been house trained.
The problem is, isn't the problem that the bill gets paid by the working poor and the next generation? The problem with the rich getting richer?
I think they just get it. You know, I think you have to keep it simple. KISS, the last word we don't use on the radio. But, you know.
Stupid?
Yeah, keep it simple. Because people get when it keep it simple.
Seems like we say so words.
It's stupid to not use stupid
on
the
radio. They're not getting down in the weeds. They're not. You say, okay, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. That happens to be true. And therefore you say it and it resonates with the people. Or, as we used to say on 96th Street, with the peoples.
It's just, it's an enormous transfer of wealth from the working class and the poor to the top 1%. That's the problem.
So,
and to the next generation. That's it just raises this.
Michelle says, I understand that certain, quote, benefits are in effect since 2025. Could you please explain if it's possible that if a new administration comes in, that they could introduce a new bill that would then negate what happens in 2025, namely putting in provisions that benefit the 1%? Thanks so much for the roundtable discussions, and that's from Michelle.
Well, yeah, any new administration could come in and change things.
More years of one president.
I was going to say, you're not there yet. And you don't know what's going to happen in the next 3 years. You don't know what's going to happen in the midterms, though I think some of us can predict what's going to happen in the midterms. But then, you know, what is that cyclical political turn going to be in the next presidential election? Are they going to basically throw out the GOP? Are they going to bring back the Democrats? It's going to be some rise of some third party where people are they've had enough and they're trying to create some different political view out there. Long time off.
But how do you pay for it?
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Well, if after 8 years of Obama and his signature legislation, Obamacare, the Republicans came in, controlled the Congress and the White House, and they've immediately attempted to get rid of Obamacare, was successful within the concept of this new tax bill. Well, let's say the next in the next election, the Democrats take over again, and then we go back to where it was, or
cyclical.
It's cyclical, but it's a I think not good for this country that it's on a yo-yo. This is supposed to be a democracy in which bipartisanship is what will get us the best legislation and the best future, and we don't have that anymore. And there are any number of reasons for that. But I would suggest to you that if, in fact, as much as I would like to see all of this reversed when the next administration, a Democratic administration, comes in, it could get reversed again in 4 years after that. I don't think that's good.
And also, these systems are ships. These are not sailboats.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it takes a long time to turn.
Took
a year
they can't to turn get this, with a change so of yeah. wind.
I don't think so. I think what's going to happen here is that we are going to see that Donald Trump has brought us dangerously close to fascism, and that's where he's going to go. And I think the history books are going to record it, and there are an awful lot of people who are going to be wiping their brows for a long time. And I, as far as it's supposed to be bipartisan, when Franklin Roosevelt took over, some of us are old enough to know that, from the Republicans, he wasn't fooling around. He went for it. There wasn't bipartisanship. There weren't that many Republicans, but by the time he was done, but there wasn't bipartisanship. What is that? He had a bold view. We had Social Security. We had all the rest of that. We had banking reform. We had all of that. So I don't know that I.
Well, we were also in a severe crisis in this country following World War II and following the as part of World War II and right after the Depression.
You don't think we're in a crisis right now with this guy leading us where he's leading us?
Yes, I absolutely do.
But
I think he's leading us into a crisis.
But I think one of the parallels between the New Deal with FDR and what's happening now is that people care about one economy, and that's what's in their wallet, what's in their purse. I think that is first and foremost. Is there more in there? Can I spend more? Can I buy more? Can I live a little better? Can I have things that maybe I didn't have before? It's a very personal experience. I don't think people really give two hoots about the economy as an entity.
Well,
I think it's
very
personal.
What's life going to be for their kids? That's the other thing they care about.
And that's exactly it.
What's life going to be?
I don't know that you're right about that. I'm going to make a confession here. I've been studying very carefully how the Shartocks are going to make out in this tax bill. And because we're a little bit older and because we've been around for a long time and because we have some little bit, a tiny bit of money, I think we're going to do all right. But it doesn't make me think, Stu, for 1 second, that this is all right, that the poor are getting poorer or that 13 million people are getting kicked off of health care or that all of these things are happening. Oh, no, I think Americans are better than you may think.
I agree with what you're saying. I just think that ultimately, and, you know, for the larger discussion of are the tax cuts good, are the tax cuts bad? Yeah, okay, you can look at the tax cuts and maybe you get an extra $300 a year.
Exactly.
Fine, but maybe you're going to get whacked on health care premiums. Maybe you're going to get whacked because of a lack of services for your child's health. Maybe you're going to face additional costs for other things that are residual parts of this larger economic picture. So you do care about what's in your wallet, and all of those bigger elements do factor into what's in your wallet or what's available to you. And yet, this is where we are. So I think looking at the tax cuts as this panacea or this wonderful political thing, whether they are or they aren't, whatever they are, it comes down to what does it do to your life? And I think that's where FDR was so successful.
I don't think I'm allowed to say this on the radio, but I'm going to say it anyway. When I saw those fat cats sitting up there with their big bellies,
arms around each other, congratulating each other
for this magnificent thing that they've done for the American people. I wanted to throw up.
Well, it's no coincidence that there were TV cameras there. It was all spectacle.
You had the black senator write a stage.
Wasn't that interesting?
As somebody who has weight challenged, I don't know that we need to emphasize fat cats unless you're talking about fat wallets, because most of them were not fat.
I don't think we should fat shame.
No. I hadn't noticed that about you, Larry.
No, well, I don't. Fat shaming is the next. You know, the sexual harassment issues are going. The fat shaming is coming.
Well, I wasn't
right
fat shaming. I was just calling them fat cats because that's what they are. They've got all the money. It's getting worse, not getting better.
In that context, it's acceptable.
Well, I'm glad that the acceptable police have finally laid hands on it.
Fun with felines.
Well, it was interesting at the bill signing. It was noticeable the lack of diversity. The picture of them standing on the steps at the White House is incredible lack of diversity. That was not America. Also, I noticed that the handful of women were all down in front around the podium so that they would be in the main picture. Mm-hmm. But that's what what you were talking about, what matters in people's wallets, I think what matters, what's in their wallets, what happens to their children, but I also, to Alan's point, what happens in their community.
And I agree with that as well.
The things that they value,
yes.
I think, but
yes.
that's part yes. of what you mean.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Alan, while you said you might make out okay, but the things that you hold dear all around you will be strained.
Yeah, you know, I haven't got that much longer, and I want to make sure.
Where are you going?
But you have wonderful grandchildren.
It's got reservations at 12:30 at Ichiban.
We'll be off the air at 10:30. Can you hang for a while?
You can have sushi, vegetarian.
Will you leave
okay.
us the scent?
A person paying, says Eve, $30,000 in taxes, sees a 2% decrease in taxes, will see $23 extra per twice monthly paycheck. I don't think that's going to convince people that this is a great bill, especially since 30K is a very high number. Most people will probably see about $5 per paycheck. Big whoop, even Rexford.
And that may get wiped out by other economic factors that are coming down the highway.
You know, I hope we're all wrong. Wouldn't it be great if we're wrong? Wouldn't it be great if this is a boon to the economy and people at the margins get jobs? There's the economists, just those who are experts, don't believe that that's going to happen.
Boeing, Wells Fargo, AT&T, and Comcast, they've all committed to pass savings on to employees in the form of bonuses, et cetera. This feels very fishy to me, as they have connections, certainly lobbying efforts to the government. And am I paranoid, or is this posturing for the public, Alan?
Well,
certainly arranged, Alan.
Well, how many Boeing contracts come from the federal government? All of them?
And AT&T is looking for this big deal right now. They
Time Warner deal.
To kill
yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Well, yeah, and they came out very quickly with these
Boy,
announcements.
Boy, did they ever.
Boy, coincidence?
Phyllis says, explain Trump's record of appointing judges. Where can I read more about comparing Trump's and Obama's appointments? It scares me to consider Trump's long hand list lasting far into the future. Phyllis of Saratoga Springs. Phyllis, you got a point. You got a point. I mean, these judges are appointed for life. He's doing young people, and he's doing people who are often unqualified to the nth degree.
Yeah, in a moment of honesty, he was lamenting the fact that he was hoping to appoint some of his friends, but he couldn't. Trump couldn't because they were all too old. He wanted them, as many as possible, to be under 40.
Interesting.
But he was quoted that. But if she just Googles, there's the American Bar Association, and there's a law group, there's a legal... Anyway, there are a couple places that have done a good analysis of these judges, but boy, they have stacked the courts.
Well, his impact on the judiciary, if he's successful getting most of his people through, is going to be perhaps the most significant impact of his administration.
Well, this is where McConnell, I mean, they blocked President Obama's judicial placements for years. And so that there were a lot of openings, and now they are pushing hard to fill those openings.
How many you got there?
Okay. Mark, I got about three.
Okay.
Mark says, tax bill. At least Paul Ryan can finally be honest that he doesn't know the consequences of his theoretical conservatism.
Deer in the headlights on the Today Show yesterday.
Yeah. He says, nobody knows. Everybody knows.
I don't know. What do you expect me? I'm the head of the, Speaker of the House. I don't know what that is.
Speaker of the House who would love to be president of the United States. So he's leaving himself a little wiggle room for when it doesn't work. And Doug says, panel, Alan is right. Oh, I like that. Only his base will support this bill, even in the short term. Then again, they will support him no matter what, Doug and Woodstock. Doug and I are on the same track.
I think he's losing his base on this one.
Good morning, panel. I don't want a tax cut, says David. I want maintained bridges, less infant mortality, well-paid teachers, federally funded science, my Social Security back, clean water, natural parks intact, and renewable energy. I don't want a tax cut. Could be a children's book. David, I don't want a tax cut. I like it.
Well, even Goldman Sachs says this is a time for investments, not this bill. But go ahead, sir.
I wonder why they said that. Al says, long-term versus short-term. Hi, all. I tend to agree with Ira's assessment with the tax bill being popular in the short term, which, of course, works in the GOP's favor going into 2018. Most people will see more dollars in their paychecks immediately, and the unintended consequences are at least a year out. The GOP has a succinct message. You're getting a tax cut. I agree with this, by the way. And I think we've seen what works for the average American voter, even if the long-term effects are awful.
Mitch McConnell said something very interesting yesterday. Is that he was questioned about this, and he said, "Are you going to go out and do a campaign to tout the benefits of this?"
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He says, "Yes, we are, and if we can't sell the benefits of this bill, we all ought to be in a different line of work."
I heard him say that.
It's all about image. It's right. all about it's a totally but, image, and that headline, "You got a tax cut," will resonate for years.
Yeah. And I have an apology to make. Yesterday, I called him a turtle. And I got two letters saying, you know, look, turtles are better.
Not fair to turtles.
Barbara said, today's topic, please bring to the people's attention that attached to this bill is drilling in Anwar. Thanks from Barbara.
It's horrific.
Let's take a break there. We'll be back. We will move on to other topics. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here, Ira Fussfeld, Stu Shinsky, and Teresa Bourgeois. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Let's move on to other topics, and we will discuss the next order of business for the Congress and the Senate, and that is to avert a shutdown. And you do this
again.
by moving things to, all right, maybe we'll do it in September. Maybe we'll do it in December.
We do it every 2 months.
Maybe we'll do it in January. Well, all right. So congressional leaders move toward another short-term spending stopgap Wednesday after talks aimed at passing more ambitious legislation appeared to collapse as government shutdown deadline approached. It's Friday, right? The deadline is Friday. And Republicans have pushed for increased military funding and disaster aid for hurricane-ravaged communities in the South. Democrats, meanwhile, want to boost to domestic programs and a solution for young immigrants brought to the United States illegally as children. This is DACA, which we're talking about. But with a midnight Friday shutdown deadline looming, not to mention the coming holidays, GOP leaders in the House and Senate indicated that lawmakers were likely to do the bare minimum, passing another short-term spending bill to keep the government open and then revisiting all of these issues in January because they will still be issues in January.
Because they can.
And yes. Does anybody think this is good? I think we all, presumably we all don't think this is a good deal, that they've got to continually.
Yes, I'm for continuing resolutions, because if you have the continuing resolution, then you don't have the deep budget cuts. However, at some point, two months ago, they needed to deal with the children's health programs, because they've kicked that down the road. But now, starting January 1st, kids are going to get kicked off their health insurance. They haven't funded it. It hasn't been reauthorized since October 1st, but they have been able to, with residual money, keep it going. But they can't keep it going.
Well, let me just
make
sure I understand. You believe that the continuing resolutions are preferable, obviously, that to a budget shutdown. But would you not say that at some point in time we must have a Congress that can get through a full budget without going through these fire drills every few months?
My concern with this Congress, with this budget, particularly after this tax bill, is when they do set the budget, it's going to include deep, deep cuts in domestic spending. And so it's better to have a continuing resolution keeping the spending at current levels than the inevitable deep budget cuts.
But to my prior point, though, another example of the divisiveness in government being such that they can't come to a reasonable compromise on such basic issues as
oh, absolutely. Is it dysfunctional? Absolutely dysfunctional. Yeah, there's no doubt that it's dysfunctional. But as Joe said, there are a number of other key things that have to be dealt with. The DACA, the Dreamers issue, and that has to be dealt with before March. And
the storm coverage, the CHIPS.
Three different health care provisions, the CHIP, the health centers.
And when you talk to the Republicans, the main roadblock came from advocates of increased military spending who are frustrated that House Republican leaders abandoned plans to pass a bill delivering more than $600 billion in full year defense funding after it became clear it could not pass the Senate.
Well, right.
They wanted the tax cut win. That Trump said, look, we're doing this first. I mean, in my opinion, I think this is what happened. They focused on this. They wanted the win. They wanted the holiday. They wanted it by the end of the calendar year. The continuing resolutions, it's not new. They do it all the time. So, yeah, push the other stuff down the road. They didn't have an answer on DACA. They don't have an answer on the kids' health insurance stuff. They thought they can get the health insurance done. They basically chose their priority for good or for bad. And I think that they just wanted that win in the first calendar year for Trump. If it's a win or not, up to you. But I think they wanted that in the first calendar year, and that's why this other stuff got kicked down the road.
And Trump said yesterday, he alluded to the fact that he's going to go to the border wall. And so a big issue with the DACA solution is that he wants money for the border wall. Well, all through the campaign, he said Mexico would pay for the wall, that the Americans wouldn't pay for the wall. So, but what he wants as a trade-off for allowing those young people to stay in the country is funding for his border wall that we don't need.
He's told so many lies that it's almost easy to forget about that wall. It's so long ago since that was on the front burner. I don't know where to start when you talk about him being a pathological liar.
But Alan, you know, we were talking about this a bit yesterday. What's the right strategy for those who care about DACA and Child Health Plus? I'm not there, so I'm not sure, but it just seems to me that it might make sense if they can pass a continuing resolution that it's not just all for defense and everybody else stays frozen, but it's just a clean continuing resolution, that you wait till early January, and then you have more information out about all of the hidden problems in this tax bill, and the Democrats have a stronger hand. I think that might be worth waiting. What do you, Alan?
Well, you know, Teresa, you're our Senate maven. You worked in the Senate, United States Senate.
Worked through two government shutdowns.
And you know about this. The question, of course, here is how many votes each side has. If the Republicans think they can just force this through the way they did the last time, they may get away with it.
They would have done it yesterday if they thought they could. Yeah.
But they have problems. And so they have to negotiate on some level. Chuck Schumer has been in for a certain amount of criticism for not being forceful enough in leading his troops into this battle. Yesterday, we had one lone senator standing up there and say, "You better not fight. You better not," and a courageous one, by the way. You better not fire, the special counsel Mueller. You just better not. I'd like to see an awful lot more of that sort of stand-up and gutsy commentary from the Democrats. I just don't see it right now.
We sat in this room a year ago and talked about this, so at the beginning of the administration, so not quite a year, and said, well, they're just sort of letting... Democrats are just letting this all kind of implode on its own and let it go. Well, that clearly isn't happening. So at what point do you say that maybe you need another strategy? If that was the strategy to begin with, I don't know.
You mean force the hand?
Well, just do something. I mean, as Alan indicated, actually say something instead of just assuming that it's not going to work out. Just wait for destruction. Because I don't see much difference from what the Democrats are doing here and just watching, waiting for the train to go off the tracks. Pardon for that. Excuse me for that, making that analogy. But waiting for that is very similar to what Trump has been saying of just let Obamacare implode.
Right.
I don't see much difference in that.
Well, I think the Democrats fought back and the public fought back on the health care bill, but obviously in the end it didn't work because Trump has, through administrative procedures, really undermined it. And then this provision in the tax bill to end the mandate might seem like a small thing, but it's going to have a very big impact.
You raise a question that has crossed my mind a number of times, and that is whether or not Schumer is the most effective spokesman for the Democrats in the Senate, whether Pelosi is the most effective spokesperson for the Congress, the Democrats in Congress, whether McConnell is the most effective on the Republican side. And Paul Ryan has, I don't know if we're on the air or off the air, but yesterday, like a deer in the headlights, describing this tax bill. The public is not particularly receptive to any of these four guys, I don't think. I have my suspicions about why a lot of people in this country don't like Schumer, who are non-Democrats. But the most effective spokesperson, I hope lightning won't hit me, but the most effective spokesperson right now is Trump. And he's the one that the way he communicates, albeit to the negative response of the 65% of the country, to the people he's talking to, he's the most effective.
Then how come he has a 32% approval rating?
That's right. I said 65, 35.
And how come he's weakening our standing globally? I mean, I think that he is heard.
And isn't Congress doesn't Congress have a lower approval rating than Trump?
So?
Well, I used those four people and said the most effective is Trump, and even he's not that effective.
Well, it is interesting because I've watched Schumer, and I know Schumer, and I like him a lot personally. But I don't think he's doing a good job here. And I think it's very namby-pamby. And I know that that huge numbers of Americans don't like Nancy Pelosi. They don't like her. The polls are all showing they don't like her. And yet, if you talk to any member of the House of Representatives, they love her. And they think that she's a very effective leader. And they won't have it. They won't change it. And I have to say, even though I haven't been that big a fan of hers, I think she's doing a better job than Schumer right now. I mean, I think she's more articulate and she's more focused than Schumer is. As far as the Republicans, you can't fault them as long as they're in the majority. I don't like McConnell. My goodness.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. Teresa Bourgeois is here. Stu Shinsky is here as well. Ira Fussfeld, Alan Chartok, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We have about 20 minutes, so we're going to get to as many other topics as we possibly can get to in the time that we have left. Let me go now to the story about the UN and the president threatening to end American aid. We're watching those votes at the UN, he says. And from what I see, this is kind of going on as we speak, as I watch the monitor from CNN. President Trump issued a threat on Wednesday to cut off American aid to any country that votes for a resolution at the United Nations condemning his recent decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Mr. Trump's statement, delivered at a cabinet meeting in which he exulted over the passage of a tax overhaul, followed a letter to General Assembly members from the American ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, in which she warned that the U.S. would take note of countries that voted in favor of the measure. So similar to Santa's naughty or nice list, I guess. Mm-hmm. All of these nations that take our money and then vote against us at the Security Council, or they vote against us potentially at the Assembly, they take hundreds of millions of dollars and even billions of dollars, and then they vote against us, Mr. Trump said. Well, we're watching those votes, he added. Let them vote against us. We'll save a lot. We don't care.
A couple of things, I think, here that need to be said, one of which is, Teresa, you worked in the United States Senate, as I keep mentioning. One of my jobs when I worked as an intern in a congressional office was to sort the mail, and we put out a questionnaire every time. And any time the word foreign aid came up, and the guy I worked for was always for more foreign aid, he would say, do you want the same foreign aid, more foreign aid, or a lot more foreign aid? The questionnaires would all come back from constituents and say, are you kidding? No foreign aid. So on this one, I think the president understands that people think, I mean, Egypt is either our first or second greatest recipient. Israel is right up there at the top. People don't want to give away the money from the United States. And so when he utters something and says something like, we don't want to, we don't care. We don't care. Obviously, we've been giving that money away for a reason. And right now, Trump throws it out the window. And there may be very serious consequences. Right.
Well, I was a stock boy at Alexander's on Fordham Road in the Bronx, which qualifies me for the answer to this question. Listen, this is just another sign of the thumbing his nose at diplomacy and further weakening the status and the image of this country around the world. And good luck to the next person who comes in, because he or she is going to have to rebuild it.
I don't get the stock boy part of it.
Teresa was in the Senate. Senate and you were in the Senate. So
yeah, I get it.
So I'm just a poor kid from Long Island. Yeah, here's what I think.
Those two don't go together.
Oh, yes. Did in the 70s.
Okay.
This is right out of his playbook. This is playing to the base. This is I'm the big brawny president. I've got the bluster. I'm going to say the thing. I'm going to slam my fist on the table. And people in his base love that, of that independence and that America First view. You know, he hates the UN. This is not news. He said this through the campaign that he hated the UN. You know, the UN, yeah, they get a lot of money, and yeah, a lot of countries don't pay into the UN. You know, does he want the UN to leave and maybe move to Geneva or something?
Well,
like
how do you make good on this threat? I mean, it's just that, right? You don't make good on this.
It's just bluster.
It's not. I don't even think it's about making good on the threat. I think it's just the image building that he gets out of this. Like, there's our guy doing his thing.
On the contrary, I think he'll take some money away from someone to make his point.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
You know, and the American people will often applaud it.
Can you imagine an American president being disinvited to visit Great Britain? Yeah. I mean, just think about that in its isolation. It's just, it's
incredible.
And Pence
couldn't go to Israel.
Well, that was a different thing. That sort of reminded me of many years ago when Nixon was in the Middle East and they threw eggs at his car. I mean, he doesn't want to go to the Middle East because of what the violence that might spur. But nevertheless, it's just incredible to me the place that he has put this country on the world stage.
Well, I think it's correct that the rhetoric does play to part of his base. It's just very short-sighted. It's dangerous. The what we're doing in the Middle East, the U.S., is just stunning. This, ironically, might help strengthen the Palestinians' position. Certainly this U.N. vote does. But if you just think about this new report out of Mosul where they said there were about 300 dead, and it turns out that it's 12,000, many of them killed with, the hand of U.S. bombing, well, supported bombing. In Yemen, we continue to support and enable the Saudi blockade of Yemen, where they're using starvation of children as a tool there. And you have this, you know, Trump essentially throwing gasoline on the fire in this Jerusalem issue in the middle of the most holiest time of the year. I mean, I just think that he is weakening the U.S. hand in that region and around the world. And there were reports again today, well, China's stepping in, the Russians are stepping in, others are stepping in. And he might make good on a little bit, but he needs these allies. He needs them. And we need them. And he does not have the right diplomats around him, or he's not.
Or Jared will fix
them.
It.
Yeah, where's Jared?
Jared's hiring a crisis communications person.
Jared's hiding emails and stuff.
Jared had to refile his
disclosures.
Well, and there was that cabinet meeting yesterday, which was disgusting in and of itself with the praise and the praying. But right behind Trump, over his right shoulder, was Jared and Ivanka right there at a cabinet meeting.
They must have been very happy. But our standing in the world is being diminished by all of this.
And
he is creating really serious problems around the world, and in doing so, he's weakening the U.S., strengthening China. Now he's being played, as Clapper said, he's being played.
All right, Alan, you have some letters?
Well, I do, Joe. I'm glad you asked. Roger says, tax cut impact. While it has been repeatedly pointed out that big business and wealthy investors are the main recipients of the benefits of the tax cut legislation, I don't think much attention has been focused on the fact that a significant number of investors in these big businesses are not Americans, but foreign investors. We are therefore helping the financial status of foreigners instead of the poor and middle-class Americans. And Mark says, Jeb Bush, sorry, who really cares about him at this point, was vilified by the Dems for his anchor baby comment. But Trump rescinded DAPA 6 months ago, and Schumer is not fighting for dreamers, a.k.a. people who are trying to live the best lives possible. We all know Trump refers to his disgustful children as my little deductions. And Gerald says, why didn't the Dems offer an alternative tax bill to thwart the Republican bill? Why didn't the media and others show the minimal positive effect of the tax cuts on an hourly basis? More specific and kiss examples of rep poor governance, fewer broad statements. Yeah. And then Stephen says, why hasn't Schumer organized a strategy to block Trump's judicial nominees? The Republicans certainly found ways to block Obama's nominees and bills. It's easier when you're in the majority.
Yeah, you know, they don't have the votes.
Yeah. Okay. And Joni says,
but I would say they probably could do more to, I mean, they have had to pull back just three of them. But I think that there has been not enough. I mean, the problem is there's so much to pay attention to, but not enough attention paid to the judicial nominees and to what's going on in the agencies.
You know, but what's in, yeah, you're right about both of those things. But I have to say, Teresa, it is interesting that they it's the Republicans who have put a base on who we will let through. So that's why this joker the other day got into such trouble. Because it was one of the Republican senators.
Senator from Louisiana, Kennedy.
Kennedy, who did it. Joni says, Schumer and most of his Democrats are only gutsy when it comes to eating their own. Al Franken, right now I am disgusted. And Rebecca says, please do not compare the fat shaming to sexual harassment outrage. Rape and fat shaming are not the same. Comments like the previously mentioned diminish and belittle the illegal, painful, and preventable action of predators. Comments that make jokes of sexual assault and sexual harassment reinforce the fear that women feel and continue an atmosphere of shame and silence. Did anybody, I don't remember anybody here making light of that. I think Ira made light of the issue of weight shaming. But
ineloquent point well taken.
Okay. Telesport says, wanted to draw your attention to the latest skullduggery apparently being planned, not signing the bill until January, therefore putting off the budget slashing impacts until after the 2018 election. Also have to say how habit-forming the show is. Fortunately, that is all positive, and happy holidays from Telesport.
Yeah, this is the PAYGO provision that's interesting. Yeah.
The PAYGO provision, which you were mentioning before, which is?
So in the Reagan era, they passed a provision that's pay as you go. So if the portions of a budget or your budget isn't fully paid for, then there are automatic cuts that go into place. And so a couple of times, PAYGO was about to be triggered, and the Congress passed essentially an override of the PAYGO provision. And so with the tax bill, clearly, they haven't paid for it, and so there would be automatic cuts in things like Medicare and Medicaid. And one of the things they're talking about now is that the president will not sign the bill till January because they don't want to trigger the pay. They're hoping to pass in the continuing resolution a provision that ends an exemption in this bill.
Okay. So, dear Roundtable, many years ago, my husband worked at a furniture factory in northern New Hampshire. It was a union shop, so when the contract was being negotiated, the workers were offered a 10 cents an hour raise. Minimum wage was $2 an hour at the time, or a fully paid family health insurance plan. What do you think they took? Again, short-term gain won out. And do you think the American people have gotten any smarter? Yeah, right. They elected Trump. Yours, Rachel from Ulster Park. Let's see. Diane said, just received my Social Security statement for the coming year and discovered that even though at age 76 I am working, my benefits stayed the same due to a $30 increase in my Medicare payment. Yeah, we've heard about this from a couple of people, right?
So Social Security has gone up. You have more money in Social Security, but
Medicare
takes it away.
Yeah. Does that mean that people my age who are not working are getting a decrease in their monthly payment because of Medicare increase? Can't imagine what will happen to seniors once the new tax legislation takes effect. And then from Eric, tax cuts. The economy and government are so complex with so many interlocking parts that the effects are opaque. Nobody knows what the long-term results will be. But if lobbyists and billionaires keep writing bills, that the country will be stripped and sold for parts. Let's see here. Okay, thank you from Eric.
And, but the good news is Trump is going to drain the swamp.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Polly, Wall Street's reaction. You are all assuming that Wall Street's reaction is the activity of humans buying and selling. Wall Street trading is now largely controlled by bots and algorithms. Ascribing human motivation to the swings on Wall Street is not realistic. I don't always agree with Polly, who is a big part of our copyright forum. Indeed, I do not. Wall Street never was much realistic gauge of how most folks' economic lives were, but now it is a totally useless metric. Okay, and then finally from Catherine, the rich have been paying themselves more and more for 30 years now, and despite the recession, while the wages of the middle class and poor have staggered, if not decreased, what has emerged during this period is the revival of the idea that the rich deserve, in capital letters, this. The social contract has been trashed.
And Ira, you were talking earlier about why AT&T and some of these folks.
Yeah, Alan mentioned it. I mean, it's the coincidence of them stepping up. You have to wonder if it's tied into their proposed merger with the Time Warner, which the Trump administration is not happy about, and allegedly not happy about because of the CNN and piece of the puzzle.
And Wells Fargo also has a case.
Yeah.
So we were talking earlier this week about Al Franken and the possibility that maybe he would not resign. Many senators, well, not many, five, came out and said that they regretted calling for his resignation, although Senator Franken announced yesterday that he will be resigning on the 2nd of January, and he will be leaving that office. I guess not a complete surprise.
So who really knows what's going on here? We don't. We see Leahy, Senator Leahy from New Hampshire, coming out and saying he didn't, even though he was for getting rid of Franken, that he didn't. He feels ashamed because Franken didn't get due process and he wanted him to have. So maybe there was a trial balloon being floated there. You know, we're getting a lot of mail here about how disgraceful it is that Franken is being forced out. I think in this climate, it was inevitable.
Yeah, if he says he's going to go, now he's got to go. Because if he stays, there's going to be just this upheaval of, you know, everything that he did or allegedly did is going to be rehashed and brought back. And there's going to be a bigger tidal wave to push him out.
What do you think of the New York Times today announcing that Glenn Thrush, who has been suspended because of sexual harassment allegations, is going to be remain suspended without pay until late January, but then will be coming back to work for the New York Times, albeit no longer as a White House reporter?
Well, you know, Ira, that's a very good question, because we do know that the New York Times have been claiming great credit for having been on top of this whole sexual harassment thing. And now they're getting a certain amount back, as you suggest, because, you know, it's don't you do it, but...
Well, we don't know the specifics of the Thrush allegation, but I would suggest to you that perhaps the New York Times is in a good position to say, wait a minute, this guy deserves to be punished, but he does not deserve to get the death penalty, which goes back to Franken. I think a lot of people would say Franken deserved to be admonished and go through the ethics committee.
That's what Leahy said.
Right, but not to be punished. Now, in the Franken case, the Democrats can say we're taking the very highest of high grounds and we need to do this to set an example for the country, particularly when you see that the president, whose allegations list is much longer than Franken's, is still in office, and it gives them the high ground in that argument.
And there's so much gray in these cases of what was done. I mean, the Garrison Keillor example versus the Weinstein example.
We still don't know the Garrison Keillor.
Exactly. I mean, supposedly he touched a woman's back. Okay, well, supposedly Thrush from the New York Times touched a lady's thigh as he sat down in a booth. Now, I don't know all the details. I don't know the full case. I don't know if there's three accusations or 25. So, as
Teresa,
far as
we get 30 seconds.
Just a second,
yeah.
Teresa.
Much more to the Glenn Thrush than touching somebody's thigh. But I think overall, my view on this is we need to be having conversations about what to do next. I think, you know, homework assignment, if you're a member of the chamber or the Rotary or any organization, you should be asking them, are they going to have some sort of discussion in the next couple of months on what to do about this? Because each of these cases individually is interesting, but we need an overall plan.
We'll leave it there. Thank you all very much. We'll be back after this.